Hey, Lauren, do you want to hear about a good deal?
Yes, Mason, I would love to.
Good, because I have a deal with your name on it.
Tell me more!
Well, in that case, GoDaddy.com is offering the best deals of a lifetime. For only $3.59 a month for a year, you can get GoDaddy.com's economy package.
Amazing! What do I get with the economy package?
You get 250 gigs of bandwidth, 5 gigs of storage, and up to 500 email accounts. You can get your website up and running.
I can?
Yeah. When you check out, enter code MUGGLE, that's M-U-G-G-L-E, and save 10% on any order.
Can you spell that again?
Yeah, I can. That's M-U-G-G-L-E.
Wow. Do any restrictions apply?
Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Today's MuggleNet podcast is brought to you by Borders. In May, thousands of Harry Potter fans descended upon New Orleans for the Phoenix Rising Conference. Borders was there to take in the sights and share a lively discussion of the series that has bewitched the world with some of Harry's most dedicated fans. Listen in and watch the action yourself. Check out the Phoenix Rising Borders Book Club discussion at bordersmedia.com/Harry Potter or click on the Borders banner at the top of the MuggleNet page.
Because sometimes pigs are made for slaughter, this is MuggleCast episode 116 for October 8th, 2007.
Well, we're back for another week of Harry Potter podcasting here.
Or should I say, I'm back.
Woo.
Thanks, Laura. And also, Jerry's here again joining us this week.
Hello.
Because nobody else wants to talk to you guys anymore.
It's just the four of us. It's just...
Yeah. I'll tell you what, the news has been so slow lately.
It really
has. Like, there's nothing to talk about anymore.
I feel really depressed. Like, I think about the time before the book came out and just how much news we had, and now I just...
Yeah.
Look at the
We
would
have spent, like, entire episodes just on the news.
Yeah.
And that's, like, entire minutes
well, actually,
just on the
just,
news.
Just last week, it took us, like, 40 minutes to get through the news. That could have been me, but...
Well, yeah, because... Oh, yeah, and then there was that whole thing with the tickets debacle.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to get through some news this week, and then we also have some Muggle Mail, which apparently nobody likes the name change. You guys were, like, making fun of me. We don't have to call it Muggle Mail. We can keep calling it rebuttals. I just thought...
I like it.
No, Muggle Mail's fine. I just like to make fun of you. I'm sorry.
Last week, you were like...
I think it's because some of our listeners post their email. Like, I mean, well, no, mail is post.
What?
Like,
post their email? That's an oxymoron.
No.
Mail their email? Like,
well, Muggle Mail. You know, most of the wide world calls it post. Therefore,
right.
You know, just the fact that you're using Muggle Mail is a strict Americanism that should be stopped dead. But we're in America.
Oh, I get it.
Oh, no. Americanism's on an American show.
But you can't call it Muggle Post because that's copyright.
It doesn't roll off the tongue as well.
And it doesn't roll off
Muggle
the tongue.
Post, Muggle Mail. Muggle Mail, Muggle Mail.
I like Muggle Mail better.
Yeah,
me as well.
Too. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Laura Thompson.
And I'm Jerry Cook.
Micah Tannenbaum is in the MuggleCast News Center with the past week's top Harry Potter news stories. Hey, Micah.
Another set of J.K. Rowling's autographed Harry Potter books have been put up for auction by the National Braille Press last week for the Hands-On Books for Blind Children charity. This organization strives to eliminate the literacy gap that separates blind children from the mainstream. The auction will continue until October 25th, 2007 at 9 p.m. Eastern, and on the next day it will be featured live at the gala hosted by The Tonight Show's Jay Leno. The Order of the Phoenix movie is now the world's sixth highest earning film, accumulating a staggering $933.9 million worldwide. Sorcerer's Stone is at number 4 with $976.5 million. On top of that, the fifth film has surpassed Goblet of Fire's U.S. sales of $290,013,036, earning itself $290,189,393. In a new interview with Variety, Harry Potter producer David Heyman discusses what lies ahead for him after the last two films, as well as what has been like to work with the actors, both young and old. Heyman takes little credit for the development of the young stars, citing their relationship with actors such as Gary Oldman and Maggie Smith. He says it's because of their commitment and curiosity to develop their craft, we've given them the platform, but they're here because they're good. Finally, the Daily Mail is reporting that the 11-year-old nephew of Voldemort actor Ralph Fiennes is set to be cast as young Tom Riddle in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Director David Yates says he has found someone to play the part, but couldn't comment on who it is. I found a really interesting kid to play Riddle. I can't tell you who it is yet. It's early days. That's all the news for this October 8th, 2007 edition of MuggleCast. Back to the show.
All right, thank you, Micah. We have, as I said in the intro, and as you can tell from Micah's news, there was some news, there wasn't a lot, not as much to discuss either. One thing I did want to point out, J.K. Rowling, Wizard of the Month for October, is Harry Potter. And it's sort of been building up. It started with the four founders, Godric Gryffindor was last. Then it went to Dumbledore?
Yeah, he was Wizard of the Month.
Yeah.
I just don't remember when.
And then it went to Voldemort. I know Voldemort was last month. And now it's Harry Potter. And I'm just thinking, like, she keeps, like, building up to, like, the greatest Wizard of the Month. Sort of, it seems like that's what she's trying to get across. Now I'm wondering, who's next? Who could be greater than Harry Potter? Or do you think she's just going to go back to normal wizards? You know what I'm saying?
Ginny Weasley, his
Ginny Weasley.
This is what the thing will read. Wife of Harry Potter puts up with all his crap and his angsty moods. No, I really don't know.
Yeah. I just thought it was some food for thought because it seems like she just keeps building up.
Yeah.
The wizards too. I mean, they're getting bigger and bigger. But
I just wonder how much longer she's going to keep doing that. Like. We're
going to
run
month.
Out of wizards eventually.
Yeah, that's true. You can't have a wizard
well,
of the month.
Well, it's a paragraph of work a month. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's true.
She can manage it.
It's not like she's writing books. She can just... Well, I mean, it can be done automatically, I'm sure. Just, you know, the first of every month. If it isn't already, just as long as she's
written
stuff.
Oh, well, I'm sure Joe's not sitting there, 7 o'clock, publish. Like, you know,
well,
I'm
why
sure
not? Why not? Why couldn't J.K. Rowling have a direct hand in her website? That's how I imagine.
I'd like to think she does.
Because Joe's not sitting up at midnight every...
When I go to jkrowling.com, 30th. Hey, Andrew, I've sat up at midnight and hit publish before on that little section of Muggle that I do, okay? And
well,
okay,
you're insane like
so
that.
So have... Yeah, you're not...
I just imagine
a best-selling author either.
Okay, yeah. That's true. Like, that's, not yet. That's true. Not yet. But it's... I just imagine that it's Joe to us, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I would love to see
jkrowling.com.
Her hand presses that button.
Like, when the door locks, for instance, I imagine it's her on the other side of the door not letting us through. It's just me.
Well, it is, but she doesn't... It's all automatically done.
Yeah.
It's timed.
I would love to see the admin panel for that. For that
oh,
site,
cool.
Like, you know, I would love to see the administration panel.
You've got one, or is it all just kind of... Flash programming.
Yeah.
But
I think that... I wonder if Joe has, like... You know, like, we have MuggleNet Axial. I named it that, MuggleNet Axial. Meaning, like, all-encompassing. I wonder if she has one where, like, you know, she clicks the tabs and just updates the site herself, or...
JK Rowling she just, Axial.
She does emails, like, Lightmaker. Like, you know, here's my latest blog post. Post it, please.
Yeah. Well, I wonder because, I mean, it begs the question, how many other people do we know? Because Lightmaker makes a lot of other sites, too. But we know a few people who they made sites for, don't we?
Emma Watson's official site is created by Lightmaker.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
That's the most recent one. There are some other ones. Let me just go on their website real quick.
The official website design company of Harry Potter movies.
Right. Well, not the Harry Potter movies.
No. Are they? The Harry Potter actors.
Oh, okay. Kids Choice Awards. They designed the Kids Choice Awards website for Nickelodeon. Dominion Chick, whatever that is. The FA Girls United, which is a microsite supporting the England women's football team.
Ooh, interesting. How are they doing, Jerry? Have you ever seen that?
Didn't even know they existed. Shows how much attention I pay to sports.
Looks like they also do a lot of video games, sport pages.
I wonder if Joe's site was their big break into mainstream sites. Big mainstream sites.
I would think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm looking at a lot of their... I'm looking at their portfolio now, and there's a lot of more recent, like, video games and stuff like that. Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, and also Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix website, I think I remember, was created by Lightmaker, too. So they get around. They definitely get around. Moving on.
Wait. Quick speculation on Harry being the Wizard of the Month in October.
Go for it.
As opposed to July, or, you know, July is, you know, when he and obviously J.K. Rowling are born. Now, Halloween night, October 31st, was the night that Voldemort attacked Harry. Do you think that has any significance here? Like,
It could be.
Well, maybe.
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Because, like, October is when Harry first brought hope to the world. Though, arguably, that was in November. Because in the beginning of the first book... It's either November 1st or 2nd, depending if you subscribe to the Lost Day theory or Missing Day. But it's McGonagall says they wouldn't be surprised if this were Harry Potter Day in the future. And it was because, like, it's the day that everybody's running around with cloaks and stuff and is all happy. So do you guys, like, I would have thought it would be kind of November or something. Or at any rate, I think people should kind of pick that up and start having celebrations on November 1st or 2nd as opposed to just July 31st for Harry parties.
I think the point is that Voldemort actually attacked them on October 31st, and of course people were celebrating the next day. So I think that's...
Next day's a whole new month, though.
Okay, but I think that if there's any significance to her making Harry Wizard of the Month of October, it's because October was the month in which his family was attacked.
Yeah, okay.
But then begs the question, why would Voldemort be Wizard of the Month for August?
Yeah.
September.
I mean, just looking at it, if you think about it, if he attacked them late at night on October 31st, British time, it was already November 1st in New Zealand.
I'm sure that clearly puts a kink.
Maybe she's got a huge
dice,
but she rolls.
No. But it puts a kink in the missing day theory, because technically anything happened on 2 days, so I don't know, but just my thoughts.
You know, speaking of like a big Harry Potter day, a lot of people are trying to organize a big event. I'm trying to find emails now because I know I've been emailed about it. Have you guys heard about this? It's like a big Harry Potter day. What year is it? But it's the day in the epilogue.
King's Cross.
And everyone wants to gather.
Oh, at King's Cross Station. Yeah.
Have you guys heard about that? I'm trying to get the exact day. Well, but it's so far off from now that I just think, like, everyone's
It's like 2027. Andrew, when you do that, the other thing is still on Harry Potter in the text-only site, or actually anywhere, for Wizard of the Month, it says, Potter joined the reshuffled Aura department under Kingsley Shacklebolt at age 17, rising to become head of said department in 2007. So she's actually made it so that in the storyline, which she now subscribes to, surprisingly, the storyline is that Harry just became head of our department this year. So if he were living...
Perhaps it was this month, this year.
Well, it just says, it says in 2007. So she made him head of department this year, so I bet everybody's really happy, and Albus Severus is really happy for his daddy.
Yeah, that's cool. So I guess moving along now, new actor to play Tom Riddle. Previously in Chamber of Secrets, it was Christian Coulson. But this is a young Tom Riddle, so he had to be recast, and I don't think Christian Coulson was really up for it anyway.
You don't know that.
I thought we heard he wasn't up
for
it.
I heard that he wasn't interested.
Oh,
but then I was looking at his IMDb profile. Well, first let's get to the story, and then we'll talk. Titan Tiffin is supposed to be cast as the young Tom Riddle. This comes from a recent article in the Daily Mail, so it's not the most reliable source, but it seems to be picking up some steam here. And David Yates was quoted as saying, "I found a really interesting kid to play Riddle. I can't tell you who it is yet. It's early days," meaning early days in the filming process. However, it seems like with Goblet of Fire and Order of the Phoenix, with my experience, even before they started filming, we would get these casting confirmations, but it seems now like Warner Brothers is trying to hide all of it until later, which seems
well. What kind of cards do they have to play? They can't hide a book, so
yeah, I know. So this guy has a little connection to Ralph Fiennes. He is the eldest son of Ralph's younger sister Martha. An award-winning film director, and old Etonian George Tiffin, a novelist and film producer. Martha is the award-winning film director, and George Tiffin, his father, is a novelist and film producer. But if a quick search on IMDb will reveal that Titan Tiffin has never been in a movie or anything before, so he's going to be a brand new actor.
He has an amazing name.
It is a cool name, Titan Tiffin.
Very cool name.
Yeah, and so we're still waiting for confirmation on that from Warner Brothers. No idea how old this kid is or anything. So
I'm pretty sure there will be, as soon as like it's confirmed, there will be all sorts of information on on him. And like the thing that I have with IMDb is that like great actors like say Ian McKellen even often do a lot of stage play, and there's no, I mean, that stuff doesn't show up on IMDb anyway. There's just no place for it if they do like stuff on stage and acting. So it's possible he does have acting experience, but
he could. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, there was just nothing listed. Movies, TV shows. He doesn't even have a profile.
Not even commercials are listed on IMDb, which is kind of a shame. Or music videos. Well, maybe music videos. I'm not sure.
He's a nobody.
Yeah, I do wonder how old he is, because in the book we see Tom Riddle as an 11-year-old and then as a young adult.
Yeah, we see him through various stages of life. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't want Christian Coulson to play 11-year-old Tom Riddle, but I wouldn't have minded if he... I mean, I was actually supporting him being the 25-year-old one or something like that. I mean, if, you know, obviously it can't be done or whatever, but they've got to cast they've got to cast several Riddles is the thing, don't they?
Right.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Well, I was looking at Christian Coulson's IMDb, and he's not doing anything right now. At least when it comes to movies or TV shows, he has been doing things, but like this year and last year, but they're all complete. He has no films in pre-production or currently filming. So, I don't know. I guess some people just aren't interested in coming back, or maybe they didn't even approach him. Who knows?
Maybe.
But they do need him.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could help. Some little continuity between the films. We've been talking about that before on the show. Just some general kind of principles that would help it move along a little bit easier.
Right.
But, you know.
Okay, but moving along, unless anyone had any other news to discuss... Wasn't really that much
news. Let's take a look at the schedule.
Professor McGonagall's birthday, but other than that, there really hasn't been much
auction,
going on.
I don't think any of our listeners are in the market for £40,000.
Yeah, there's book auctions all the time too, so we really never talk about those. All right, I guess that's it. Moving along to announcements now. Don't forget to vote for us on Podcast Alley. It is a new month, as the co-host mentioned last week. And by looking at the top 10 list, we're number 5 right now.
Hooray.
Which is, it's okay, I guess. I mean,
Who are we under?
We used to be number 1. Nobody likes onions. We're also under the Super Secret Backstage Show, whatever the heck that is. Keith and Girls, number 2. Free Talk Live is number 1. So we encourage everyone to please place their vote over at Podcast Alley. We like being in the top 10 list because Podcast Alley is one of the sites that a lot of press go to check out what's hot in podcasting. And we, you know, like to be featured in news articles and such because we're always, you know, referred to as those Harry Potter kids, those Harry Potter podcasters. So be sure to vote for us.
I still remember your acceptance speech at the podcast awards, Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
Why the hell did
those Harry Potter kids get it?
I know what you're thinking. How did Harry Potter... Yeah. It's
how the hell, yeah. I should have been, how the... Did those Harry...
Yeah. Well, I think you shocked the wine really tasting thinking. Guys. The wine tasting guys were all really shocked that you said that.
So, really?
Yeah.
Why? They taste wine. They're shocked at Harry. Like, okay.
Cool. Okay, next announcement. MuggleCast Down Under, guys. Listen, everybody. MuggleCast Down Under. MuggleCast in Australia. T-shirts now available for pre-order. Yes, I'm reading this from a script. Listen, guys, T-shirts for the event are now available. What we're doing is we're pre-ordering them because actually we're giving away these T-shirts. Well, not giving away, but we are selling them. They're $20 Australian each, and what they're doing is they're actually funding the shows. So just quick information. We have about 300 people we're expecting to attend, but the problem with that is venues are quite tricky to find. We're still looking for places to accommodate our rising numbers, and pretty much the only way we can do any of this is through pre-ordering T-shirts. So and otherwise, we have to charge at the door or something like that. So basically, we have these cool T-shirts ready for you, and they're actually quite awesome. You can choose from two different colors. And if you would like a T-shirt, please, please, please pre-order ASAP through MuggleCast.com, and you will get one. You can choose what event you'll be at. It will be amazing. These shows are going to be great. We have lots of cool stuff planned. And I think the official dates are the 19th of October in Sydney, after school for those people who were worried, the school kids, and the 21st in Melbourne, mid-afternoon. And that's awesome. That's pretty much it. That's MuggleCast Down Under in a box.
Laura, well, thank you, Eric. Laura and I were talking about this earlier, and we realized you really have your act together for this. This is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's really well organized. I got the event. Very impressed.
Quite a good event going on here. Not to say that we didn't think you could do it, but you got quite the event going on here.
And I will ask you guys, as soon as we have a venue, I'm going to ask you guys to try and contribute content, because depending on what kind of multimedia stuff we can get, I want, like, if you could record a little bit of video or something just to play to those
Sydney
fans.
Yeah, that'd
be
fun.
Just for the Sydney fans. Because, I mean, they want... Well, and the Melbourne fans, too. But, I mean the Australians are going to want you there. So, I mean, it's just natural that you guys have a hand in the show.
Yeah, I'm going to have Steve Irwin on mine.
Well, I might have to edit it, but no.
Why?
Because we're looking to have a projector screen and stuff at some of the venues, and we're actually looking in lecture theaters and stuff like that, sort of around the unis is our current status. So
that's cool. Okay.
Cool.
So we might Andrew, you just reminded me of being at the aquarium.
Why?
Do you remember that when we were at the manta ray tank?
Oh yeah.
I already know what happened without knowing the story. It's horrible.
Hey, don't forget MuggleCast ringtones are also available over at MuggleCast.com. I really need to add a link. I'm gonna add a link on MuggleCast website. I just realized there is no link, so it's probably why nobody's getting them right now. There are MuggleCast ringtones for sale right now. My Wizard Rock singles. I'm gonna get the MuggleCast theme song up there sometime this week as well. So be sure to check them out. They're only a few dollars, and we only get about half of that, so it goes to supporting the show. So thank you very much if you do purchase one. Another more depressing announcement. Jamie is going to be off the show for a while because he is back in school. So he won't be on for a few weeks, and I'm just saying it because otherwise we're going to start getting emails once he starts disappearing for a couple weeks. So just so everyone knows now, he will be off the show until his winter break because internet does not work there at Durham University. Well, his internet connection is not fast.
And winter break is about kind of like the first week of December. So.
You hear that, Durham? You're slow.
However, Pickleback members are still getting a dose of Jamie every week because that still works for.
Yeah, though we can't exactly overnight.
When do they go on winter break there?
Early.
Is it the beginning of December?
Yeah, about
I'm guessing it's the beginning of. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's not bad.
Yeah. Okay. And also, just one thing I wanted to touch on quick because we do have all this new studio equipment. Well, I do here in my room. I just wanted to mention that we are starting to consider doing more regular live shows. We actually did a test live show just for Pickleback members via Ustream on Friday, and that went over pretty well. We had some technical glitches, but it was a test show. It was a test show to make sure everything is working okay, which it seems like it, but we're still ironing out a couple glitches, but once we get through those, we should be able to put together some seriously good live broadcasts. And we want to know what everyone thinks about that. Maybe like once a month doing a live show. And one of the things we started considering as of lately was having Eric and Laura and even Micah come over to my house to record together. Because if we're all together to record, not only would we interact a lot better, but it would also sound a lot better. I mean, these episodes do sound pretty good edited, but just the interaction, you would notice better chemistry, better better quality, just overall a better show. Okay, yeah. Let's move on to some Muggle Mail now. Unless you guys want to call them rebuttals, I don't know. I guess this first email is a rebuttal.
From Kevin, age 19, location Germany. Subject is the refilling basin, not an inconsistency. Heard about us from the MuggleNet main page. In episode 115, Laura, Kevin, and Eric were talking about the Horcrux in the cave and how Voldemort had to refill the basin when he had made Creature drink the poison. You said it was a small inconsistency, but it doesn't necessarily have to be one. You have to realize that the locket wasn't in the basin before Creature had emptied it. Voldemort only dropped it there afterwards. See chapter 10. This leads me to the thought that whatever potion was in the basin in the first place was probably not exactly the same one Regulus and Dumbledore drank later. It might not have even been made by Voldemort, because why would he fill the basin without putting his Horcrux in first? So I think he used a potion which would refill itself after someone drank it, and he filled the basin with it for the first time at his trip with Creature. I know I might be nitpicking, but it's fun. And then there's a little emoticon. Here you all love the show, Kevin.
I would have thought that Voldemort would have put potion in first to make Creature drink it, just to test the potion's efficiency.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Does he test his own work? Does he have faith in his own kind of thing by now? Is he suave in his step?
It depends how egotistical he was then, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. The next rebuttal comes from Laurel, 22, of New York. She writes, just wanted to send a note in defense of Micah not having seen the most recent movie right when it came out. Because as most people know, we were ragging on Micah a couple of days ago, or a couple of weeks ago, for not seeing the show. Well, you guys were. Or sorry, not seeing the movie yet.
Yeah, it was me and Jamie.
Yeah. A person's love of a book, any book, cannot be measured by their excitement or lack thereof to see the movie. That would sort of be like saying that a person doesn't legitimately enjoy Charles Dickens' writing if they weren't first in line to see Great Expectations. I consider myself a very devoted fan of the Harry Potter series and read all the books many times, but I have not yet felt any need to see all the movies. I did see the first movie and was rather disappointed, so I skipped the next few and only saw the most recent because a rather attractive guy asked me to go with him.
Ooh.
Anyway, the point is, give him a break, guys. The movie doesn't even compare to the books. Apples and oranges, folks. I'd like to stick up for Laura and Jamie and just say right off the bat that they were just playing.
Yeah, we really weren't being serious. And also, we do run it. Harry Potter talk show.
Yeah, so it is important. That
yeah, we're kind of expected to see this kind of stuff, but at the same time, I mean, I guess apples and oranges, but yeah, wow, that's interesting, seeing the first movie being so disappointed that you wait until the fifth.
Huh. Yeah.
And only because an attractive guy asked you.
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly there's other things on, you know, your mind, which is great. You're a more well-rounded human being than us geeks, but that's sad. Anyway.
So I mean, it was just something I wanted to point out that we're not most of the time we joke on here, and I don't know if you guys know Jamie very well, but when he tends to run into like a good joke or something, he likes to run with it and keep going with it for the duration of an episode, say like the Prison Break thing or this. There's other examples I can't.
Yeah, and we all like to give each other a hard time, like, because we're all friends here. So.
Yeah, and it was funny because while I was editing that show, Micah saw it. He wanted to see it before I actually released the show because he was afraid that he would get too much crap about that. So, so there's also a second part of this email that Laura and I guess I wanted to sort of address too. There's one other little thing that I thought I'd mention since I'm writing in and it has been bugging me for quite a while. I can't remember which host said this, but before Deathly Hallows came out and you all were debating whether or not Harry would die, it was mentioned several times that, basically, once he killed Voldemort, Harry wouldn't have anything to live for since Dumbledore, Sirius, and his parents were dead, so he might as well kick it. That sentiment struck me as unbelievably heartless and really disgustingly insensitive. Millions of people grow up without parents or family, but God willing, they have to move on, hopefully putting the worst of it behind them and get through it. I would like to think that a character about whom seven books have been written, countless websites devoted to, and who is the subject of your very own podcast would have the strength of will to overcome such a misfortune and go on to lead a healthy life. I just hate to think of any people or children out there who have suffered the loss of their family and loved ones hearing you guys saying that they don't have anything to live for. Maybe an apology wouldn't be in order. Anyway, sorry for the overall critical tone of this email. I really do like your podcast and enjoyed your debates and speculations on the books. Keep on keeping on. Cheers, Laurel.
Okay, well, whereas we weren't really joking about Micah, we were really serious, he's a loser for not seeing the movies, we were actually joking about this whole Harry should kick the bucket thing. I don't know who said it, I don't think it was me, but we are not condoning that people with no parents and no family should die, and that's yeah. That's the bottom line, okay? That actually was a joke. I'm sure it was a joke. Without knowing who said it, I know that was a joke.
It sounds like something I would say. I don't know.
Well, and also remember, during the lead up to book 7, we had the debate segment a lot. And a lot of what the debate segment was surrounded around was stuff like, should Harry live or should Harry die? So, and what I think listeners should know is that we would randomly be assigned sides to these issues, and we had to argue them even if we didn't agree with them. So it wasn't necessarily a matter of, I do think Harry should die. It's a matter of, oh, we're having this debate to bring forth different viewpoints, so I'm going to argue that Harry has to die. It's not actually that we thought he should.
And I assure the world that we're all glad that he didn't.
Again, I bawled through the whole chapter where I thought he was going to. I was very upset. Yeah. I was relieved when he didn't. And I really don't think that, even if anybody on the show did say that Harry, who is a fictional character, should die because they feel like that most of his loved ones are dead, and that I don't know if they would think that maybe he would be reunited with them in the afterworld. That's the only way that I can think of anybody actually justifying that. I really don't think that can actually be linked to us saying that real people have nothing to live for if their family's dead.
That as well, yeah. That's true. That's
I don't think anybody on the show would ever say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll move on for that, but every once in a while we like to clear things up. And
yeah.
Okay.
That was one thing.
From Zara, age 14, location West Plains, Montana. Right? M.O.? Yeah.
Missouri.
Oh.
Missouri.
What?
Oh, come on.
Oh,
you've been out of this country way too long. Time to come back,
jeez,
buddy.
What's Montana?
M.N.
M.N. That's Minnesota, dude.
Is it?
Yes. It's Minnesota.
I'm pretty...
Jerry, oh. Resident Brit, look it up. Look it up. Find out what M.O. is. In the meantime...
M.O. is Missouri.
Why was Pettigrew in Gryffindor? On episode 115, I really liked Micah's explanation of why Pettigrew was a Gryffindor. Me too. However, as I was listening to the voicemail, I immediately thought of Dumbledore's quote in Deathly Hallows, "Sometimes I think we soar too early." I'm not saying Dumbledore was referring to Pettigrew as well as Snape, but it is possible, or rather, is it possible, that Pettigrew was braver when he was 11... and that he grew to be a coward as he aged. I'd love to hear what you think. And, Laura, you're my favorite. Pickles, Zara.
Aw, thank you.
I just want to clear up real quick. Minnesota is M.N. Missouri is M.O. Montana's M.T.
So does that mean I was right the entire time? Oh, yeah.
No.
10 years in a foreign country. Americanness still intact.
What are you talking about?
You said
Montana.
Tana.
Yeah, it was M.O.
No.
No,
M.O.
it's
is Missouri.
Missouri.
You said M.T. was...
I don't think so.
What?
No. M.T. is Montana.
Listeners will judge.
Okay, but when you're
I'm looking at the United
show,
States
Andrew,
Postal
it's
Service's
your neck
website.
If, it's your neck if you said the other way.
It's not my neck. I didn't... Laura, did I say it, Jerry?
No, you said
it. I had
Missouri.
It right. Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry, Missouri is... Well, I was right about Minnesota, though. Minnesota's M.N.
I said Minnesota's... Whatever. No, okay, maybe you were right about that. I thought Montana was M.N.
But we're both wrong. We're both wrong. And that's
well,
good.
But you were wrong first, so...
Yes, I was. Okay. I concede. Okay.
Next rebuttal, Lisa, 27, of Charlotte... Oh, was there anything to talk about that other email?
Oh.
Just Dumbledore and so. Asking just... about whether or not that related to Pettigrew, if he was born a coward or if he was raised
a coward
by society.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this on the show. People can change. I mean, especially in the beginning of their magical career till the end. Like...
So do you think?
I think that's why we were saying that the Sorting Hat is almost flawed because,
yeah,
you know, it sorts you. But then again, is it smart enough to really put you in the right house through your entire 7-year career?
Yeah, I mean, it can't really tell what you're going to grow up to be, necessarily. I mean, there's no proof that Pettigrew was going to grow up and end up betraying his friends to their death, so...
Mm. Then again, right. he could have chose... As we talked about last week, there was a pretty good point raised about he could choose to go to Gryffindor because, you know, he didn't want to be with the scary-looking Slytherins, but at the same time, you know, he ended up in the house of their mortal enemy, so, yeah.
Right. Next rebuttal comes from Lisa, 27 of Charlotte, North Carolina.
What
she writes,
there's an next rebuttal.
North Carolina. Next Muggle Mail, whatever. I'm going to say rebuttals forever when I do that transition.
Fair enough.
Next Muggle Mail, Lisa, 27 from Charlotte, NC, that's North Carolina, for those of us living in New Zealand and completely lost touch with the United States. There was an argument about whether Harry defeating Voldemort with the Expelliarmus spell was not a good thing. Was not a good ending. Well, JKR set us up to know how very important that spell was in one single line. Please remember when the DA first got together in Order of the Phoenix and Harry wanted to teach them to disarm, and one of them thought it was a waste of time, and Harry said that the spell had saved his life. There's your connection. That spell saves his life, and therefore it is important. I guess I kind of look at it as foreshadowing. What do you think? Next, I agree with Laura. Voldemort was too smart for his own good. It's like Einstein. He was a genius, but couldn't write a grocery list. Also, Eric, have a Coke and smile, man. You seem uptight. I don't think so.
Well, thank you, Andrew. I'm still not convinced, though. I mean, I loved the scene in Order of the Phoenix when it was Zachariah Smith was in the DA and he was talking about, oh, you know, we're going to learn how to use Expelliarmus and that's going to save our life. And Harry just, with that snappy retort, like, it saved mine last year. You know, sort of like, that was good, but I didn't expect Joe to pull that card for the next two books. I mean, I thought it was a good sort of, you know, realization, but just the fact that the final battle ended in Expelliarmus is still and may always be just disappointing for me. I'm sorry I feel that way. I'm really, really sorry, Lisa from NC, North Carolina, now that I'm knowing the postal things again. I'm sorry, but I think I'll always feel that Expelliarmus was a ripoff, and I'll always feel like it was used too many times, just like Polyjuice Potion and stuff. I just wish it were different. That's all.
But I think Lisa provides a good argument. I mean,
yeah, I think so too.
It saved his life there, therefore it should be used every single time Harry has to escape battle.
I don't
know, but it is a nice little bit of foreshadowing. Yeah. Like Harry specifically said, you know, it saved me from him last summer. So I mean, it saved him from Voldemort, who had just like gotten his body back and was somewhat at the height of his, you know, newly restored power, because Harry didn't really know anything about Horcruxes at that time.
Right. Well,
he didn't have the knowledge that he had in Book 7. So
can you call it foreshadowing or just a recurring plot theme or plot device or something? You know, a plot device. Harry needs to defeat a wizard that's overconfident for him. Expelliarmus. You know?
Well, it can be a recurring plot device that's also used for foreshadowing.
Yeah, I'm just trying to... I'm trying to strip everything that I thought would be foreshadowed as opposed to everything that turned out wasn't. So, for instance, we can't really talk about certain things about the chamber. There were certain references people picked out to the Chamber of Secrets, you know, in Book 5 and 6, thinking that it was going to be a really big thing in Book 7, and it wasn't. And so a lot of people are, I just know, disappointed. But, I mean, I guess this rebuttal's pretty... I mean, this rebuttal's all right. Sorry I seem so uptight. I should sing and dance a little bit more. If you guys watch my Blickles, I sing and dance all the time, but, you know, whatever.
And one final email this week comes from Rebecca, 20, of Boone, North Carolina. She writes, hey guys, love the show! I'm listening to episode 115 right now, and you brought up the point that why would parents of any normal, i.e. non-DA or kid of a Death Eater student, allow them to remain at Hogwarts while it was obviously overrun by dark magic? I'm currently rereading Book 7, and on page 210, Lupin tells the trio, attendance to Hogwarts is now compulsory for every young witch and wizard. It's a change because it was never obligatory before. Thanks a lot for the awesome podcast, y'all. Okay, well, thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, that was intelligent.
Yeah. Well, sarcasm? What?
No, I was not being sarcastic. Why do people think I'm being sarcastic?
Okay.
That's why. A lot of people really... No, that was really intelligent. That was, I forgot...
Maybe you're picking up New Zealand tinge in your voice and it's making you come off a bit sarcastic.
You know, I hear Australians are the most sarcastic people in the world. I don't know if that's true. They also talk about goats a lot, but that's a side reference. just the Australians I've met working for this event. But no, apparently, so sarcasm, no, but I really like that. That was, and that quote, I don't know how they would make people go to Hogwarts. That's cool that they are.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. So that's good.
So this week, our main discussion, quite a lengthy and sure to be interesting discussion, written up by Eric.
Woot!
The morality of Dumbledore, a.k.a. the magical pig. Am I missing something?
Yeah, I don't know.
The magical pig. No. It's like Harry Plopper from The Simpsons movie. But that's what I thought of when I wrote The Magic Pig, which was the original title of this discussion. It'll make sense right now, I'll tell you.
Okay.
So it's time to reach a conclusion here, as we have seen 7 books of happenings to guide us. A few episodes ago, we were asked if it was moral that Dumbledore may have been, and we quote, raising Harry like a pig for slaughter. Do you guys get it now? And are you familiar with the term?
Yeah.
It's the magical pig.
Yeah.
Dumbledore's raising Harry for pig for slaughter. Okay. It is true that through 7 books, Harry has had Dumbledore guiding him, subtly and not so subtly, until finally becoming the one to map out his entire fate. Therefore, was it morally correct for Dumbledore encouraging Harry and psyching him into battling Voldemort when the outcome was likely to be Harry's own death? Or, if Harry was the only one who could defeat Lord Voldemort, is it good that Dumbledore bestowed such care and guidance, love that Dumbledore showed in raising Harry to fight, that it overrules anything bad? Or was Dumbledore just saving his own skin or putting the wizarding world before a boy? What do you guys think now, just generally, on this topic?
But was it likely? Was the outcome likely to be Harry's own death?
Well, I think it was. Wasn't it?
Go back to point one.
Ever since the day of the prophecy, neither can live while the other survives.
But I don't see how it's likely if he ended up living through the story.
He died.
Anyway.
You remember?
Well, I think
he did die.
No, he didn't.
He didn't die.
Die.
He was in limbo. No, he came close. I guess we could say.
Yeah, he was between worlds. But I think a lot of the point was that Dumbledore had to be very, I guess, categorical in his raising of Harry, like instilling in him the unconditional moral obligation that was binding in every circumstance, and it wasn't dependent at all upon Harry's purpose. So, like, Harry couldn't know that he had to die, or else that might have changed his perception of how he should fight up until that point. Because by Dumbledore not allowing Harry to have that knowledge until the last possible minute, it really made all the difference. Because Harry wasn't looking towards the final battle as, I have to die, in book 4. He was looking towards it as, I have to defeat Voldemort. So he doesn't have the whole idea of his death looming over him, which I think was a big, crucial part of this.
Well,
it's definitely a case of knowing something about yourself affecting the way you see the situation. I mean, I've just been reading, complete tangent here, his Dark Materials, and that's also got a premise of the main character having a destiny to fulfill that if they knew about it themselves, it would change the entire course of their experience.
Well, that's the thing. So much of Harry's destiny was uncertain. It seems like Dumbledore is a manipulating old man. I mean, maybe we're meant to think that in light of Book 7, but it just seems like Dumbledore manipulated Harry quite a bit, and it doesn't even matter not telling him his destiny so that he could face his destiny, because from what Dumbledore himself said, a lot of the prophecy was, you know, kind of set in store only if, you know, Voldemort acted on it, and Voldemort would always choose to act on it, and all sorts of other stuff would happen, but it wasn't entirely clear. So what I've done is I have mapped out some examples of times in the book when Harry looked up to Dumbledore. So all of you guys have this, so I wouldn't mind if you guys would take turns reading, just so it's not all me talking. So, Lauren?
Well, first of all, what we have here is that Dumbledore saw his family in the Mirror of Erised, just as Harry had, and he lied about what he saw. He told Harry that he saw socks. And so by doing this, he was keeping a distance from Harry.
But is it a lie, though? Like, I mean, it's Harry just
knows
he's
and,
joking.
And it's funny, I guess I realize I shouldn't have made the first point. He lied about socks for the discussion. But.
Well, and I don't think the point here is that he was trying to distance himself from Harry, but I think that it was probably very painful for Dumbledore to look in the mirror and see his whole family there.
Yeah.
It's probably not something he wanted to talk about. Harry even noted that it had been a very personal question. So
okay. Okay, so how about then, and this is the first disappointment I had. Number two, at the end of book one in the hospital wing, Harry asks him flat out the first question, and they reference this later in the books. He asks why Voldemort wanted to kill Harry, and Dumbledore doesn't really tell him. And that's understandable. He justified it in book five, was it? That Harry was too young to know of the prophecy. You know, I'm kind of okay with that. But let's move on to the book two
really?
Events. Yeah, I might be. I'm thinking about it.
Well, see, I'm kind of surprised that you say that because, I mean, I love the way that she did it in the book because I think the point was to show that Dumbledore was imperfect and to take, I guess, the best move that he could have taken would have been to keep Harry informed about the prophecy from the start, probably. Honesty is the best policy. So when you look at Dumbledore, like, if that were a real life scenario, that would be a huge problem that he waited 5 years until after Voldemort had come back, until after Voldemort had killed people that Harry cared about, to actually tell Harry what his
Oh, you know what, you're right. Wait a minute. He only told Harry about the prophecy after Sirius was dead. So maybe there is more to be gained by this whole Laura, you're right. You bring life into my own eyes. I appreciate that. But
well, I think the point is that Dumbledore was human and he made mistakes.
Yeah.
And his mistake was he cared too much and he didn't want to worry Harry.
In this main discussion, I don't want to just say that Dumbledore is a flawed character. I agree with that. I'm sure we all agree with that now. I want to determine if Dumbledore was not sinister, but seriously flawed. You know, beyond just the sort of compassion of an old man, some of this stuff, I mean, as the title, you know, or as the X title says, Harry was raised like a pig for slaughter. Dumbledore basically just focused all his attention on Voldemort, and that's all Harry could think about, and oftentimes ignored Harry and treated him, quote-unquote, well, questionably.
Yeah. I sort of want to... Are we going to go through all these points and try to defend Dumbledore, too? Because, like, for the first point, I sort of want to stick up for Dumbledore and say that Harry was too young at the end of the Sorcerer's Stone when they were looking in the Mirror of Erised. Like, I think that one is excusable. You can't really go into details with Harry at that point.
Well, Dumbledore could have warmed up to him and said, you know, hey, I see my family too. You know, we come from similar families, and I know what it's like to lose a brother or two. And, you know, he could have lose a peep.
And that's that.
He could have said that. So
tell you more 6 years from now.
Yeah, but then also think about the student-teacher relationship.
Yeah.
And... I mean, obviously that, and obviously that changed a lot as the books went on and as things got more serious, but I'm sure at that point Dumbledore was also thinking about protecting Harry by not becoming overly involved in his life, because what else could you do to Harry Potter to make Voldemort want to kill him more than being best friends with Dumbledore?
True.
You
know?
Well, I think we can safely say, though, that even if Dumbledore talked to Harry about the film that the same as when Dumbledore visits the young Tom Riddle in the orphanage in that sequence, and then Harry asked him if he was going to keep an eye on him, and Dumbledore said, well, of course. I mean, I'm sure Tom Riddle didn't know most of the time that Dumbledore was thinking about him, but I'm sure he was.
Yeah, that's
a good point, Jerry.
And then in book two, Dumbledore does not confide in Harry, but instead asks Harry to confide in him, guilts Harry for not being entirely open, but then...
What are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Well, remember the scene in at least the movie where Dumbledore asks Harry, "Do you have anything you wish to tell me?" And Harry kind of really feels guilty that he's not really telling Dumbledore about the voices he's hearing in the corridors.
Yeah.
Oh right. Yeah.
Does that
happen
in the book?
It's in the book as well.
So.
It seems that I mean, Harry only found out that the chamber was open, you know, through Dobby, through Colin Creevy in the hospital wing that night. And it's, I mean, maybe it was Dumbledore's intentional wording to say the Chamber of Secrets has been opened again, but it just seems like a sort of offhand thing where Dumbledore lets Harry get up to his own stuff, but then when it comes time and Harry actually does find the culprit, as he tends to do, it just seems like Dumbledore's like, well, have a way at it, Harry, you know, and he just lets Harry deal with everything. And it's like one thing to let Harry be free, but Dumbledore really could have invested a little bit more time, I think, with, I don't know, just not even just talking to Harry, but Dumbledore himself could have had a bigger presence in the outcome of Book 2, I think. Not that Harry needed him there, because he did fine on his own, but I think that it would have been a lot less dangerous for a 12-year-old in the Chamber of Secrets with a basilisk if Dumbledore was on his side. Like, I mean, we see this, you know, great scene in Book 6 with, you know, I'm with you, Harry, and there's this whole Dumbledore-Harry thing. I'm saying that could have happened as early as Book 2. If anything, I mean, you know, just Dumbledore, the headmaster of the school, knowing so much about the school and sort of leaving Harry to his own accord, and with Hermione Granger, who, thank God, wasn't killed but petrified, searching in the library and finding out what the creature was. I'm saying Dumbledore could have had a little bit more of a hand in that. Don't you guys think?
I guess so.
So you're basically saying that Dumbledore should have been more involved in, like, the investigation that the trio was doing
in
on the chamber.
In Book 2, I think it's interesting how Dumbledore behaves because of all the like when Fox bursts into flames and Harry gets sent to his office after the Justin Finch Fletchley incident, and Dumbledore says, well, you know, I don't suspect you, but I'd like you to tell me anything you know. That's like sucking in Harry dry for information and, you know, not giving any return in a way. I mean, he gives his consent, you know, sort of thing, where he's like, I'm not going to convict you, la, la, la. But it just seems like there's some part of Dumbledore that was never fully explained about why he doesn't really care as such. He just sort of, I mean, he has his own headmaster duties to attend to, and sure. But if the whole thing is about preparing for Voldemort, Dumbledore could have been doing it a lot earlier than he was. Maybe that's a character flaw.
I think if Dumbledore were to get more involved with the trio's discovery of the Chamber of Secrets and learning more about it, I think he might have been either too afraid to give them too much information, or just he didn't want to help them because, again, the student-teacher relationship, that helping them get into the Chamber of Secrets and discover it, I don't even think
I'm saying he could prevent them. He could find it first or something. I mean, in a way, you know, Dumbledore might not have known that Harry could speak Parseltongue until at least the event at the Dueling Club, but I think it just would make sense that even in the myth, in the lore of the chamber, you know, a monster that only the heir of Slytherin can control, Dumbledore knew by this point that Voldemort was the heir of Slytherin, or the current heir of Slytherin, or highly suspected it, or something, and there should just have been, you know, maybe a little bit more caution taken by Dumbledore. We don't know what steps Dumbledore took in the school. The school was facing closure. Dumbledore himself was expelled in year two, as early as year two. And it seems like there was merit in the Ministry's claims that he's sort of, all these attacks are happening and Dumbledore's just sitting there.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I just can't help but wonder what else he could do. Like, I just don't feel like that even if he were willing to help the trio find the chamber, I don't think they would have confided that in him.
Well, and that's fair enough. I mean, he did ask Harry to confide in him. Harry said no. That's fine. You're right. You're right in a way. But additionally, Dumbledore could find the cave and know what you had to do to open the cave. Horrific. How to pull the boat. How to get across the lake. And he couldn't find the chamber. And that's fair enough. He was not a Parseltongue. But I do think that it just seems that Harry, I mean, Dumbledore just let Harry do his own discovering all year, which is great, but it's not very sort of wise as a parental figure or as anyone, as a headmaster of a school, to let your students go in danger without, you know, first knowing the extent of it yourself is quite quite dangerous. And no matter what Dumbledore says about wanting to give Harry a fighting chance, it just doesn't seem all that practical.
I guess what you have to...
Maybe Dumbledore...
I guess what you have to say is also that, I mean, looking past the actual characters themselves, if Dumbledore had all the answers in the book and helped Harry all the way along, it wouldn't have made a very good book, would it? There'd be hardly any character development,
That's the thing.
Oh, Jerry, don't tell me it wouldn't have made a good book. Maybe
Dumbledore would have stepped in if he realized that they weren't doing what had to be done. Or, you know, maybe he was keeping an eye on him and checking in to see what they were up to. But if and plus he needs to let Harry figure out these things on his own so he could be prepared for fighting
Voldemort.
That's
exactly what we're talking
end.
About, like, Andrew, though. We're talking about raising Harry as a pig for slaughter. So is Dumbledore or isn't Dumbledore doing that?
Well, I think if you wanted to raise him as a pig for slaughter, you wouldn't have done anything to help him, not anything. I mean, he wouldn't have... if he wanted to raise me the pig for slaughter, he would have stopped Harry adventuring, because all that stuff built up his courage and his skills. Dumbledore wanted to raise him as kind of a placid pig.
Well, why not? It's in everybody's best interest. It's in everybody's best interest that Harry is a trained fighter for Voldemort. It's in everybody's best interest that... I mean, I'm just taking an interesting standpoint here, or trying to.
Right. Well, the question is then, did Dumbledore know that Harry wouldn't actually die? Because if he knew that Harry wouldn't actually die, then he wasn't actually raising him as a pig for slaughter. Snape just thought he was.
Well, I don't think there was any certainty that Harry wouldn't die, but at the same time, you bring up a fair point about knowing
knowing
that the blood relation or whatever, since Voldemort shared Harry's blood, it tied him to the earth, etc. The thing is, and I don't think you guys, I mean, maybe you guys picked this up, but Dumbledore told Harry he had a choice whether or not he was actually dead at the scene. He could choose to have died at that very moment, or he could have chosen to go back and, you know, feign death for a little bit and then defeat Voldemort. And Harry did choose life, which is, you know, it's a great big thing about choices. But because of the ambiguity, or because of the choice Harry had to die or to live, I still consider that moment as Harry's death. In a way, I mean, your heart can stop beating and it can start up again. You know what I'm saying? So I choose to believe that Harry did die when that happened, and it's simply that, you know, he chose to come back and he was able to, like Neo in the Matrix, but you know that I choose to believe he did die, and I choose to also believe that death was a necessary part of the thing for Harry, and that's my chain of reasoning for that. And even though he did come back, I would like to think Harry did die, and that's where the fuel is coming, saying the inevitability of Harry's death makes him being raised by Dumbledore.
Well, I don't think he died, though, because...
He didn't die. I mean, Joe said this herself, there are points where
Harry's scar hurts so much he thinks he's going to blank out. That's almost dying, or that's almost passing out.
All right.
Yeah, that's kind of a far way from dying.
Well, I think you can say is that the part of the soul that's living inside him died, and perhaps that's what allowed him to experience that near-death experience.
That was it, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was a near death. See,
but he's gone so close to near death. Is all I'm saying. I want something to make this special in my mind, because Harry's gone so close to near death. His head has been splitting in two. He's been possessed. He's been this and that and the other thing. And it's just that's just why I sort of pass it off as this was a death of Harry's. I mean, it was Harry's death.
Even if
he was faking it the entire time and maintaining consciousness, it was a death of Harry's, as far as many were concerned.
I think the important concept here isn't necessarily his death, but his willingness to die for those people at Hogwarts. Because it wasn't... I mean, yes, Lily's death was the act that actually gave Harry the blood protection, but it was her willingness behind it, her absolutely laying her life down with no questions, that gave Harry that protection. And I think that Harry having that same willingness for the people at Hogwarts is really what was important.
Yeah.
And that's what protected them, not that he actually died.
Did he have this willingness, or was it that Dumbledore himself was dead?
He walked to his death.
Everybody else was dead. You know, Harry had nothing to live for in his own mind. And please don't write in, Lisa. Please don't say that he had nothing to live for.
Wait a second. Ginny, Ron, Hermione, the Weasleys minus Fred, they were all
still
alive.
I stand corrected.
He could have just said run, hide, and...
Well, I mean, Dumbledore himself is... I'm saying all this could be an effect of what Dumbledore bestowed in Harry. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's and that's, again, the point of the main discussion. I'm saying that all of these thoughts could just be Dumbledore's inside Harry, and was it moral for Dumbledore to do this to Harry, to make him, you know, not value himself over anybody else? And, you know, maybe that's a trait Harry already had.
He's saying that effectively Dumbledore brainwashed him.
Did he? Is the question? And we should just continue this, because we've got a lot to get through. But I'll skim it because I mean can't be too long.
Okay. Well, let's talk about brainwashing real quick. I don't think he brainwashed it because he wasn't really giving him anything.
Yeah, exactly.
He was brainwashing him in the sense that. Well, okay, no, he just wasn't brainwashing him. He was more like conditioning him.
Why didn't he tell him about...
He constantly gave Harry a choice.
A choice? Well, was that really wise then, to give Harry a choice all the time? If, I mean, if...
Yeah, because I think this is all part of his training. This is all part of his training to become, you know, to be able to fight Voldemort.
I still think I just think it's like giving Harry choices, like faking giving him a choice, because he didn't have a choice, did he? He couldn't walk away because Voldemort would always look for Harry. Harry would never be safe. Him and his loved ones, it's a Spider-Man effect. He would always...
I think Dumbledore did always allow Harry to go out there and do these things, do all these battles, like, you know, in the Chamber of Secrets, in the maze, eventually going to fight Voldemort. But I think that Dumbledore was keeping a close eye on him and was willing and ready to step in if he was ever needed. I mean, you know, like, look at Fox coming in the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
He was definitely we view the events in the book through Harry's perspective. through Harry's perspective, don't we? And it's quite clear that Dumbledore was keeping a closer eye on Harry than Harry ever realised himself, and therefore we're kept in the dark about it too.
But is that moral? I mean, I'm not going to ask the question again. I'm just going to. That's good though. That's good. I mean, just let's just keep going.
Let's keep moving, and then we'll answer: is it moral?
At book two's conclusion, Dumbledore gets all the evidence he needs that Voldemort has a Horcrux. He says that to Harry in book five, or book six, actually. I thought I had all the evidence right there at the end of book two when you handed me the diary. But basically, despite standing up to Lucius Malfoy, he pretty much says his please and thank yous and goes on his jolly way. If Dumbledore had banned and been particularly fierce about banning Horcruxes and the knowledge of them, as Slughorn says, Dumbledore was particularly fierce about that kind of talk and hoo-ha, it seems Dumbledore would have been before that point in time, so Dumbledore would have had to ban the books on Horcruxes, like, just after Voldemort left school, or certainly earlier. So if my chain of reasoning is that if Dumbledore knew enough about the sort of area that Voldemort was dipping into, ban Horcruxes and the books on the Horcruxes from the school libraries, then it shouldn't have been that much of an epiphany to Dumbledore about the diary. And I don't think it was, because after all of the storytelling, Dumbledore was the one who brought up, why was it that Lord Voldemort chose to act through Ginny or something? And everybody was shocked. And, you know, because Voldemort hadn't been mentioned, or Ginny, at that point before, or Ginny hadn't been. You know what I'm saying? So, it's like Dumbledore just got suspicions. He got confirmation of the suspicions. He basically relied on Harry in Book 2 to bring him all the evidence he needs that Voldemort is making Horcruxes. And it doesn't seem like that's safe. I mean, again, it's Hogwarts.
Well, I'm just going to keep going back to this training thing, because, like, you know, okay, it could come across like Dumbledore's having Harry do all his dirty work, so to speak. But then Dumbledore's also doing some dirty work on his own. Like, we just never really hear about it. I mean, like, in Half-Blood Prince, in Order of the Phoenix, you know, we know he's doing dirty work. We hear that he's up to something, but we don't know
At least then Harry's 15. We're talking about when he's 12. You know, I mean, it's like the thing. Okay, just like the thing where originally people were saying, okay, could 11-year-olds find the Sorcerer's Stone? Could they, or did Dumbledore want them to? I mean, I think it was an honest mistake that Dumbledore was in London that day, but, and you know, he did come back, and presumably he actually did save Harry at the end of the first book. Presumably there was some kind of interference with what was left of Quirrell writhing or whatever, and that would be a good point to bring up in this discussion. But
I think something important to remember, though, is that would Dumbledore put such a high amount of responsibility on any 11-year-old's shoulders? No, he wouldn't. The reason that Harry is different is because Harry had a full-grown wizard mark him as his equal when he was an infant.
Well,
so automatically, that puts him
a step above everyone
else.
Yeah.
But he's still a kid. He still needs love. He still needs all sorts of stuff that he hasn't had. And I mean, Dumbledore felt sorry for him, and I agree that Dumbledore's compassionate, but let's continue. In Book 4, the seemingly apparent will of Dumbledore to keep Harry safe, except it's under Dumbledore's order that Harry becomes the unofficial fourth champion. Remember, the founding people of the schools, Beauxbatons and Durmstrang, are kind of pissed at Dumbledore. They think he's finagling a little bit and put Harry's name in or whatever. And Dumbledore says, well, you know, the rules of the goblet say whoever comes out must go in the thing. Dumbledore could have kind of stopped Harry from going from being the fourth tournament, from being the fourth champion. But, and this is what I wrote very biasedly, the culprit would only come out if Harry played the game, and Dumbledore went all year talking to Moody without realizing that he was Barty Crouch Jr. What the heck? Don't you know your old friend? What else important was he doing year four? I mean, what was Dumbledore doing that made him sort of... And Harry was the fourth champion, and that was... If you ask me, that's actually one of the best examples of using Harry as bait. And he did so blindly with Moody being... Or Barty Crouch Jr. being right next to Dumbledore all year long. I mean, I'm not saying Dumbledore isn't a flawed character, because he is. But this is a serious flaw, I think.
Well, the first point about Dumbledore ordering that Harry still be one of compete in the Triwizard Tournament. I mean, I just think that's Dumbledore believing that whatever Triwizard the goblet says should be done. Whatever.
Also, was it really Dumbledore that said that?
Is it the rules?
Wasn't it Crouch that said? These are the rules, and he has to compete.
Maybe it was,
but Dumbledore referred to Crouch and saying,
"Oh, yeah, I think Laura's right." Yeah. But I mean, well, then it could be argued that Dumbledore still didn't object,
and Dumbledore still didn't.
Dumbledore knew he was right, but
we don't know the level of the bond, though, do we? There's a magical We're told there's a magical contract. We don't know what the level of that is, whether or not it's removable.
Oh, it's true. Yeah,
it's true, though. Yeah. I mean, given what we've seen of Dumbledore's power, I wonder if he could not override it. But
Dumbledore was probably excited he got in.
Well, no, he was scared.
Mean, maybe a little worried, but at the same time, Andrew, it's probably training him. It's part of his training.
That's exactly what I'm saying, though. Andrew, haven't you seen the movie? Did you put your name in the goblet? Did you?
Yeah, that's a Michael Gambit
scared
touch.
For wow. Harry. And by the way, we're skipping movie in book three because I really have no complaints about book three and Dumbledore. That was all right. He fixed everything with the time. And movie three, I just wrote down the casting of Michael Gambon. But
see, Dumbledore had to step in.
I just argue, is still one of the best books, so I don't have a lot of complaints about Dumbledore's behavior. At the same time, though, Dumbledore didn't object, and Dumbledore, I mean, this is the Triwizard Tournament. You know, Dumbledore himself puts the age restriction that prevents Fred and George from putting their names in. I mean, Dumbledore himself protects this thing, and then once Harry gets chosen, he lets him waltz right up. I mean, is that not, do I have no basis for any kind of evidence here? Any kind of argument?
I think Dumbledore was somewhat flabbergasted that Harry's name came out of the goblet. Like, that's when you think about scenes that they copied almost exactly from the book onto the screen, that was one of them where Dumbledore just sat there and stared at him.
But it's times like those where,
like,
you have to act.
How did this
it's
happen?
It's time like those where that's when you have to do these things.
Yeah, but he's not going to act in front of 500
he did in the movie.
Students in the middle of the Great
he
Hall.
He backed him up into the big trophy and started yelling at him.
No, he waited until they were somewhere private.
Yeah.
That he didn't have to yell at him in front
still,
of
still,
everyone.
In the book, he was like, okay, Harry, please just tell me you didn't put your name in the goblet. And then most mysterious is the personage that he adopted, really. But I still think, I mean, and going all year with Moody, with Barty Crouch Jr. as Professor Moody, that is actually a character flaw. I mean, that's pretty intense, I think. No matter.
Oh, he was far too trusting.
Well.
But that's what we've known about
him
all along.
Mm-hmm. So now. Yeah. Book five. We found out at the end of the book that Dumbledore didn't really want to be around Harry because he thought it might arise the dragon, the dragon that's inside Harry, whenever he looks sort of Dumbledore in the eyes, because Voldemort's looking through Harry's eyes, or even if he's not, the temptingness would draw Harry over the edge, given the light of the new connection established between Harry and Voldemort. Now, but at the same time, you have to admit, when Book 5 opens, there does seem to be a serious amount of, well, a serious lack of news for Harry. He's really pissed. Nobody's writing to him about the slightest thing. Would it not be possible, and this is my question for Book 5, for anybody to have written him a letter and say, you know, Harry, I suspect Voldemort can see in your mind, and therefore it would be dangerous for me to contact you. A simple explanation like
that would freak him out, and again,
that's about, I can see a response, and it's about letting Voldemort know how much you know. But I'm trying to see if there was any kind of thing that could be done about Harry's ignorance, because nobody was telling him, and it was really not making matters worse or better for anyone that Harry was left in the dark.
I agree with that. Laura, were you going to bring up a point?
Well, I was going to say that if you send Harry a letter that explicitly says, hey, by the way, I think Voldemort can see in your mind, so I'm not going to talk to you.
Well, is that any more awkward than any of the questions he would have had to face later? I mean, we're...
Well, it's not a matter of awkwardness. It's a matter of if Voldemort could see into Harry's mind at that point and realize what the letter said.
Yeah, he would realize the connection
then
himself.
That would be a problem, and he would have realized the connection much earlier in the book.
And it was just speculation, but I think Dumbledore should have included a clemency way before the attack on Arthur Weasley. But I mean, then one would argue that he wouldn't have seen
definitely.
The attack on Arthur Weasley, and that would be a big plot point, and Weasley would have died, and Tonks and Remus would have
and there'd be rainbows
happy
and
child.
Sunshine.
But yeah, but
well, wait. I mean, Joe was planning on killing Arthur anyway. So maybe he was going to give him the lessons beforehand and like the original, one of the original layouts for the book.
Well, no, I think for the plot of the book, I don't think he was going to give him lessons. I'm saying, assuming, and this is the whole thing, I guess, accepting the books is one thing, but if you want to take them into a world and say, was it really moral to do this? Of course it's how the book is written. Of course these are all plot points. Of course the books had to be written the way they were, but was Dumbledore a moral character for that? I mean, now it's time to sort of suffer in a way. As J.K.R. has written him, was it actually a bad idea to do what Dumbledore did? No one disagrees, that if the books were different, or if Dumbledore was different, the books would be completely different. That's fine. But, you know, further.
Yeah, so you're looking at this like a real-world approach. Like, is it morally acceptable to raise one person as a pig for slaughter for the benefit of the overall community? That's the question you're asking,
yes,
correct?
And, I mean, because the thing is, I don't think it's too unrealistic to make this a real-world scenario, only because the children who are reading this book are going to try and take, or parents are going to try and take morals, or, you know, people always argue in essays on Harry Potter, you know, the book has so many good themes, and so many good, you know, so I'm just trying to preempt anything that people might take out of these books. And I mean, I think one of the best ways to do that is starting with Dumbledore. I mean, our hero, the wizard, the aged wizard, the genre specific old wizard, wizened old man.
Right. I think I think that's a really good question to ask, but I think the difference that comes in and makes what Dumbledore is doing acceptable to a point, I'm not saying that everything he ever did was right, because he certainly made a lot of mistakes, but Harry also had that moral obligation to do what he did, and I think that regardless of whether or not Dumbledore chose to help him, Harry would have tried to defeat Voldemort anyway. So it was just to Harry's benefit that Dumbledore decided that he also had an obligation to help Harry, or to train Harry to defeat Voldemort.
So do you reckon that Dumbledore was simply, you know, kind of making sure that Harry was in an environment where he wouldn't get too far in danger? Do you think that Harry was... I mean... Do you think that Dumbledore was...
I think Dumbledore knew Harry was going to be in extreme danger. I don't think that he was blind to that. But I think he also wanted to foster an environment in which Harry would be able to flourish in a way.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
To be able to find out, you know, test his strengths. Yeah. And
I mean, Eric, just imagine if Dumbledore was helping him through all of this. Where would he have been when Dumbledore died? After Dumbledore died? He would have been lost. He would have been too reliant. He would have been looking for Dumbledore's help and advice.
Are you actually going to make that argument?
So we would crash and burn.
Are you going to actually make that argument, Andrew? Because
what?
I think...
Which one?
Because Harry still relied on Dumbledore. After Dumbledore's death...
Yeah, so imagine how bad it would have been.
After Dumbledore's death... No, but you made the opposite point. You said that if he didn't rely on him, then he would be in trouble. But you think that, or you said in your point, that Harry learning to cope on his own was essential, because if he hadn't learned to cope on his own, that's what you said. But Dumbledore's will and everything left all of the pieces to the clues of J.K. Rowling's book series that...
But that's exactly what they... But they needed those things. There was no other way they were going to get those items.
But then it's not a case of Harry learning to defend himself. It's a case of Dumbledore fostering Harry, which is the whole point. Was it right to
but
do that?
But that was a very... But that was a very small part of it. I mean, I'm not saying Dumbledore shouldn't help them out a little bit. He should, especially when they absolutely need it. But when they don't absolutely need it, which was proven through several
when
of the
books.
When
was it proven that they don't actually need it? I mean, look.
Well, they went through. They successfully unlocked the Chamber of Secrets on their own.
Well,
Harry successfully fought Voldemort in Goblet of Fire.
Uh-huh.
He warded off hundreds of Dementors.
Well,
on
no, that, yeah. that that's actually
he
arguable.
He created a Patronus.
That's actually arguable only because of the time loop. It's arguable because the whole thing is somebody would have originally had to ward off the Dementors because Harry saw himself in a time loop means that there would have eventually had to be a first one. That's just a paradox. I mean, I'm willing to just agree with you guys, but at the same time, some people agree that Dumbledore would have had to sort of mess with time and be the original person Harry saw or something. And meanwhile, if J.K. Rowling ever felt the need to explain it, she could say that Dumbledore used Polyjuice Potion to turn into Harry and make him see himself. But
no, that's a very weak argument. Physics doesn't state that there has to be a first case. It's a recurring loop because it's two events that come that go around and around and around.
Yeah.
I mean, he's seeing a point in the future. He isn't seeing a first person do it and then do it again and do it again.
Well, that's a question. Fair enough. Just the whole will and testament and everything about Beetle the Bard and just the fact that Hermione could say Accio Horcrux books and have them fly right to her. It just seems so flawed in a Dumbledorean sense. And I'm
when did she ever do Accio Horcrux?
That's what she said. That's how she got every single book on how to do a Horcrux. And there was brilliant.
She did.
She said Accio Horcrux.
But what does that have to do with Dumbledore?
Well, yeah, that doesn't really relate to Dumbledore.
I know.
That is one of those loopholes that, you know, I think we've said on the show a couple times, why can't you just Accio everything?
Yeah.
Why can't you Accio Voldemort?
People are Accioing me when they want to talk to me in the chat. I feel like some kind of celebrity or something. I don't know why. But,
yeah, I get Accioed all
Yeah, you get Accioed too. Accio Andrew. But, anyway. But it has to do with Dumbledore because I'm just trying to see, well, okay, if Dumbledore was going to do it, he should do it right. And if Dumbledore, I'm sure he has flaws, but is Dumbledore raising Harry for, I don't know that I've presented the right scenarios to attack the question correctly. Maybe a listener, maybe Muggle Mail can help, but I'm trying to just bring up this, it's still a matter of what Dumbledore did and didn't do. And
let's keep...
Yeah.
Moving
through
the rest of the books.
We're right here now. Okay, at the end of book five, just quickly, I'm going to tell you everything. Now, I've written this specifically. This is the most self-conscious we're going to get, or self-aware. Maybe that's just the fault that it's a book series constantly involving. So maybe it's not that much of an issue that Dumbledore said he was going to tell Harry, quote, everything. And then obviously there was more to follow that had to be spread across books 6 and 7. So I'm saying maybe that's not that much of a complaint, but it's still, in my mind, a complaint that...
It is misleading.
It is misleading.
I mean, it was misleading to us, too, especially when Scholastic used that as a teaser for what was coming in the book.
Oh, yeah, that was kind of...
Yeah, that...
I mean, the way they did that.
I don't think I'd ever been excited in my... I'd been more excited in my whole life. I was like, everything? Everything, yeah, Dumbledore? Like
really?
But,
huh?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What? I'm saving my huh for...
Yeah, sorry, Drew. I didn't want to preempt your huh. So,
it's got to build up.
Well, whenever I saw that advertised, I didn't think that we would learn everything just because we saw...
No, but a damn fair amount more than we did, didn't...
Well, I don't know. I think we learned a lot.
We did, we learned but it wasn't
the prophecy
everything.
Is a lot of information.
I think also, being very dedicated fans, we've got a completely different concept of what the word everything means as well.
It's true. I mean, I guess it's true, but
yeah,
that's the world J.K.R.
think...
Foster, so she should know how to deal with it and explain everything in it.
Hmm.
I think that by everything, he meant, I'm going to tell you what your destiny is, by the way.
Well?
Like, I'm going to tell you that either you have to die or Voldemort has to die.
Tell you everything about
Why
this.
Why did he say that?
Then, instead of saying, I'll tell you everything. I mean, he didn't... Okay, he told him that a prophecy was made. He showed him the memory of the prophecy being made by Trelawney. Okay, so that shows... Ooh.
I guess it was everything crucial at that time.
Or do you think that was... I mean, he didn't tell him that it was... Well,
the prophecy stuff is what mattered.
True, I guess. He didn't tell him that it was Snape that found out. But then again, that would have just worked for Harry to hate Snape, which was not a good idea, considering Snape was a good guy.
And he also promised Snape that he wouldn't tell.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, see? Now
it's definitely
learning.
A case of Perkins, isn't it? It's only telling him what's relevant, really, what he needs to know.
What he needs to know. Well, it was hardly everything, and maybe that's just a fault of Dumbledore's, that character flaw, but...
Anyway, we said we were going to keep that point short. Yeah,
okay, so in book six, the mystery surrounding Dumbledore's burned hand. I wrote this down as a bullcrap moment. Dumbledore put it off so long, but... What was the end result? Reflex issues? Because like, they made a point in book seven, his reflexes weren't as fast. So that's fine, Remus Lupin, okay? You just talk all night about Dumbledore's crap reflexes, but I'll tell you what, if all it takes to destroy a Horcrux is some basilisk fangs, surely Dumbledore would not have had... Or a problem destroying the ring, or was it the curse on the ring that was making Dumbledore's hand burn? Because I'm not sure, because didn't the ring also have a curse on it? The ring that was, of course, the Heir of Slytherins, and also the Peveril Crest, and also the Deathly Hallow.
But do you think that Dumbledore... I don't know.
Why was he so ambiguous about it? He wouldn't even tell Harry about the burn. Later, Harry, and it seemed like this big deal, and it's just a matter of...
No, it didn't. Only Harry made a big deal.
Well, therefore we did.
I mean, Dumbledore always brushed it off as nothing.
Yeah.
Well, no. He said it has a very, very interesting answer to be dealt with later. That's what he said.
Did he say?
No,
he said
the story was interesting enough. He didn't want to spoil it by revealing it too soon.
The story was interesting.
I mean, of course it had a good story. I mean, if I showed up to a live podcast with a burnt hand, would you expect a boring story?
No, I would expect you
maybe.
To...
I burned
had to do
it.
That.
I'm pretty sure half the audience would be like, WTF. So. I don't know. It's just...
What's that mean?
What's that mean? Okay, book six then. This is... I think, the concluding point. Dumbledore died, presumably leaving Harry everything he'd need to continue, but in an end result that would kill Harry. Now, all in all, is it moral to raise the only one to defeat the Dark Lord... to do such, knowing the pain that he went through. Harry did lose Sirius in book five. He lost his parents to begin with. He was with the crappy Dursleys. And Dumbledore did love Harry. And it was explained, and it was shown that Dumbledore did care about Harry and did love him. But there's just a point to it where we've seen in book seven Dumbledore becoming so, at times, so egotistical. And it was his own self-revelation that what Grindelwald was doing was wrong. That made him, sort of change his mind and fight Grindelwald to begin with and save his family and become the moral man and never take the position at the ministry because he was tempted with power and he knew that about himself. There's good things about Dumbledore, but even though he didn't take the position at the ministry, was he abusing the privilege as headmaster or as, the person who can train Harry up to play mind games with him? Did he play mind games with Harry?
In sense of morals, he's having to face the moral choice that every leader, every hero in every story that's ever been written has had to face, whether or not to make that choice to sacrifice one person's happiness for the sake of thousands of others. I mean, what it is. I mean, his moral obligation is making Harry uncomfortable, but in turn it's resulting in the savior of hundreds of thousands of people, so...
You're right. I guess if you ask me, if
and I mean technically, I mean when you consider, I mean there are lots of studies that go into this kind of thing. Like, is it okay to make one person suffer to benefit tons of other people?
Generally,
if the amount of happiness outweighs the amount of hurt, is it okay? And I think what makes this scenario different is that Harry knew that he was going to have to suffer anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, again, reiterating my point, Dumbledore knew he was going to do it anyway, so why not help him? Or why not give him the necessary
tools? Did he help or did he hurt him? I mean, he caused Harry certainly a little bit more pain.
I think, I don't think so. Think about how much more pain Harry would have gone through if he hadn't had any guidance at all. Like, I mean...
I'm not saying about no guidance at all. I'm saying if Dumbledore would have guided him and told him everything, at least at the age of 15 or 16, everything before he died or everything. I mean, there stands something to be gained by Harry learning it on his own. But the way Book 7 progressed, I really don't think Harry learned much on his own. I really don't think so. That long time in the woods didn't really make Harry learn anything. There was some weird thing about a snake inside a lady, but that was about it.
And about those little things called Deathly Hallows.
Just a small point.
Ooh. Which happened to be what? The opposite of a human being? Thanks, Hermione Granger, who happened to accio a book out of Dumbledore's office. I'm sorry.
I guess we should go around the table now and just final thoughts on...
Do you think it's right?
Okay. Yeah.
Two questions. Do you think it's right to sacrifice one person's happiness or one person's life for the lives of many, first of all? And then do you agree or do you think that there's something to this argument about Dumbledore being more than a flawed character and actually committing some serious crimes on Harry?
Okay, I'll start. first point. Was it wrong for Dumbledore to...
Okay, well, first of all, is it okay to sacrifice one person's life or happiness for the life of others?
No, it's not. But I think Dumbledore...
Really?
Yeah, it's not. But I think Dumbledore was... Well, first of all, it depends on the person. I mean, I don't want to make, like, a Hitler reference, but if you're going to kill off Hitler, just, you know, the...
That would make many people happy. Okay, well, let's rephrase a good person then, an innocent person, in fact. Is it right to corrupt the innocence of youth to sort of bring into reality the burdens of the world?
It's not all right, but I think Dumbledore was confident enough that Harry would not be sacrificed, that Harry would make it through. I mean, maybe Dumbledore had some inkling, had some shred of evidence that would prove that Harry would definitely make it through. And so, no, I don't think that you should sacrifice a good person in order to benefit a larger group of people. And I don't think it relates to this discussion because I think Dumbledore was sure that Harry would be successful in his battle.
So the odds were in Harry's favor? Could that be successfully argued?
Well, yeah, I don't even want to call them odds. I would think that Dumbledore saw more than just odds.
Well, a lot of it came down to chance, didn't it?
Yeah, yes.
I mean, about Peter Pettigrew redeeming himself or not.
Yes, but I'm hoping... I know. But I'm hoping that Harry, or that Dumbledore, was just... Something just made him confident in believing that Harry would make it through. I cannot see Dumbledore being okay with losing Harry. Harry being sacrificed in order for a larger group of people to be happy and survive and get past Voldemort. Move on, you know?
Well, okay. I'm of the opinion provided it's kind of a single person's life, and also that through Dumbledore's actions, Harry was conditioned to, when it came to it, be ready to die. I mean, at the end, he wasn't suffering. It's described as, he had an amazing sense of calm, that he knew this was going to happen, and he was okay with it. I mean, in the end, is he suffering? Is his death something that's causing him anguish? No, he was ready for it. He was... We're just taking responsibility. He knew that his actions were going to benefit these people, and he was happy with it, and I think that's all it comes down to, really. I mean, the fact that he didn't die is, of course, a good thing, and perhaps Dumbledore did have the foresight to see that killing the single piece of soul would release Harry.
Yeah.
But,
Laura?
No, it is not morally permissible to sacrifice one person's happiness for the happiness of other people. But that question implies that you're taking that from them without giving them a choice. And Harry was given a choice up until the absolute last minute. Like, he was in a limbo between the world of the living and the dead. And Dumbledore said, you can die if you want to. You can end this right now. You don't have to go back and fight him. You can just end it and you can be done.
No, and was that a choice? Because Voldemort would have still been alive, and then all the people Harry feels responsible to would have been let down by Harry.
Well,
is that
it
a real choice?
Sure, it's a choice. Harry could have decided that, hey...
Screw them all.
You know, I've had enough of this.
Screw them all. The afterlife is a place to be.
Yeah, he could have said it, but he didn't, and I think that's the point. Dumbledore always knew that Harry was a good person, and he would make the right choice. So I don't think that Dumbledore forced him into anything.
It's so interesting. The question, you know, is it right to sacrifice the life of one to save many, is, I think, in my mind, followed by the question, can you guarantee that this person's life or death will affect those people in that said positive way? You know, what power do you have to actually guarantee that that sort of thing will happen? I mean, obviously, if it's Hitler, that'll happen. But I think, in the end, I'm kind of borderline on yes, it is, but at the same time... I don't think that kind of thing can be known, so it's not morally permissible. I think there should be ways around it. But again, because this is a book series too, I'm trying to, you know, pull myself from the reality and say, okay, so it's not really permissible. It's a novel idea, a novel concept that if you could control every situation, one you know, could die to save others, and that's the whole point of martyrs, etc. And that's all good and fine. Now, I do think that Dumbledore was, in a way, leading Harry. I do think there could have been a sort of better or different character in Dumbledore, but then perhaps it wouldn't be Dumbledore, and we wouldn't be talking about it with such uniqueness. We'd be making references to other books. Well, maybe we haven't read any other book series, but I just think it is Dumbledore, and maybe that's the whole thing about Harry Potter. It exists as something that we can discuss literally for how many episodes now? 116? I mean, we've been doing this and shows like this where we can pick a point this thing and talk about it. And maybe it's just me begging the question. Maybe I'm annoying everybody. Maybe everybody turned the show off 30 minutes ago, but...
Everyone's nodding their heads.
Everyone's nodding their heads.
Just kidding.
But... But this, just the fact that this can be discussed is actually, I think, something in itself. And I think your guys' conclusions was really good. Mm-hmm. I think I liked your guys' conclusions very much so. And I'm personally a little happy, so.
Yeah. Well, I think the discussion went well.
Yeah.
And
nice.
I'm sure there's going to be plenty of feedback about this next week. And we didn't really talk about the second point that you wanted to address, but... I mean, we could save it for next week, because this is quite a long show now. Okay, so next week, Eric, you want to talk more about Dumbledore's family, and we'll also extend on our discussion this week with rebuttals.
Yeah.
And
we'll have extra people working on the main discussion, so it won't be kind of circular and trying to ask a big question about literary discussion.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I think it was
we'll be
good.
Talking
it
about
was
Dumbledore.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
So I mean, next week will just be about the family and the cool parts about what we learned.
Okay. Yeah. It's time for my email of the week. It comes from Nikki, 13, of Rochester, New York. Subject, Andrew! How they heard of us, MuggleNet main page. IP address, 66.66.115.105. Her message. So I hear you are on the market now. I, too, am single at the moment. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. So, want to get together? Anyways, keep up the good work on the show. Love it. Best wishes, Nikki J. May I read again? Her age is 13.
And she's from Rochester, New York. Well, age is no definition of maturity, Andrew. You should know that. You were young when you started this show.
Not when
I'm 18.
Well, fair point. But
okay.
I'm 18 now. I want more
age
out of a relationship.
Legal age.
If I'm going to be with a 13-year-old. Yeah.
Oh, right. You have
that's
to be legal,
yeah.
too.
I mean, that's not... Well, I mean, no, that's not what I was implying, but... It was...
Well, begs the question, Andrew. Are you on the market?
It's time for chicken soup from the MuggleCast Soul. This comes from Sydney.
You can't do a moment.
Of Burke, Virginia.
No, that was not a huh segment.
Yes,
I'm
it was.
Rejecting that.
It was just a weird
no.
email.
Oh, fine.
I have one about a hermit crab, too. You want that one?
That sounds good.
Dear Andrew, I got a hermit crab last night and I almost named it Andrew, but then I realized hermit crab, C-R-A-B-B-E, so I named him Vincent. Love, Shannon, 14, of New Jersey.
Nice.
In case it entered your mind, yes, I am the same Shannon from New Jersey who said your voice is so dreamy during the live event. Okay, so thanks for that. Chicken soup, Sydney L. from Burbank, Virginia, 11 years old.
Burke, Virginia.
What did I say?
Burbank.
Burbank, California. Burke.
About 2 years ago, my sister Rachel was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia. She had to have much treatment, even a bone marrow transplant about 5 hours away. We had to visit her every weekend, so if you add that up, that's 10 hours of boredom per week. Then my dad got me a video iPod. When I got my iTunes account, my dad first searched for Harry Potter and subscribed for the first free thing there. I've been an avid listener ever since. The first episode I ever listened to was episode 50. Yes, I have 67 MuggleCast episodes on my iPod. Also, this summer, I was stuck in either Durham, North Carolina, or summer sleepaway camp where I couldn't bring my iPod. You were the only thing that saved me from my boredom. I even made a poem for you. I got an A+.
Ooh.
And here's her poem. At the end of the week, when I'm feeling meek, and I go on MuggleNet and start to fret, and then go on iTunes, it's no time for balloons. I double-click on MuggleCast. I really want it to last. And then my frown turns upside down. Pickly love from Sydney.
Oh, I first of all, I like the sign-off, pickly love.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Oh, and there's a postscript. There's a postscript. P.S.
What did she say? My dog. Yeah, can probably eat more pickles than all of you.
Weird. Wow. I wonder what the grade was based on. Like, was it rhyming? Was it like rhyming schemes or? Because
I think it's about overall content. I mean, that's the whole thing.
Or was it what are those poems called? It's like 4-6-4 or like
haiku. Haiku 3-5-7.
It's obviously not a haiku. But
this isn't a haiku.
Yeah. Well, that would be weird though. MuggleCast haikus. You can do a listener challenge.
Well, I think that does do it for this episode of MuggleCast. We do thank everyone for listening. If you have any parcel mail you would like to send... Eric, you're sighing. What's going on?
Oh, no. I was trying to come up with a haiku.
Oh, okay.
Because I Googled haiku, and it's 575 syllables.
Oh, right.
And I'm trying to think of a MuggleCast haiku
based
on that lovely poem.
While you think of that, we'll go through the contact information. Laura, if someone has parcel mail, how could they get it to us?
You can send that to P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia, 30028.
You can also call in a voicemail question or comment, a listener rebuttal, muggle mail, whatever you want to call it. Just keep your message under 60 seconds and eliminate as much background noise as possible. To dial, if you're in the United States, you dial 1-218-20-MAGIC. That's 1-218-206-2442. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-8144-0677. And if you're in Australia, down under, you can dial 02-8003-5668. We just renewed that number. It costs us $60 for a year. So if you're wondering where...
So use it.
Huh?
So use it,
yeah,
please.
So use it, yeah. I guess their prices went up. I don't remember paying that much last time. But so if anyone's wondering, well, where does this money go? Like the ringtones and stuff. That's where it goes to. Phone numbers, hosting costs, our food, stuff like that. Oh, yep. And you can also Skype the username MuggleCast. Just visit Skype.com to download the free software. Then you can add MuggleCast as a username. And you can make a free call to us. Skype is completely free as long as you're calling another Skype name, such as MuggleCast. Mm-hmm. You can also email us using the handy feedback form on MuggleCast.com or use any one of our first names at staff.mugglenet.com. There's also many community outlets to reach us. We have the MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm. There's the fan listing, and I do want to point out that the forums, unfortunately, no longer exist.
Well, they will be back. They will be back. Yes, apparently there's something on the site right now that says the official casting forums will be coming back up and revamped, and I don't know much about it.
What do you know?
I'll tell you that.
An all-new, completely revamped site is coming soon. If you're interested in being involved with the new site as a moderator, please send Alice an email with your name, age, forum experience, ideas you have for the site, which could make it better and more active, and in 25 words or less, why you want to help out.
So anybody interested in...
Well, yeah, that's why I'm reading it, so...
Oh, okay.
Forums, yeah.
I thought you were... Yeah, never mind.
No. If anyone's interested, because we always get emails saying, how can I help the show? The forums, the fan forums are a great way. And maybe we'll start promoting that more to get more people involved on it and discussing, you know, the show and also Harry Potter.
Yeah, because there's not much of a venue sort of thing for all the new fans even to discuss. I mean, the forums were what we had, and then they got taken down, and now they're coming back up. So we should do that.
MuggleCastFan.net/forums. And then Alice has her email address there where you can contact her to apply for a position. I'm sure they're going to do a great job, no matter what they do.
Guys, I have my haiku ready.
Okay, hold on. Just continuing with the community outlets, you can also visit dig.com and dig the show for us. That's like a vote. And you can also vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley and rate and review us on Yahoo Podcasts.
Woot.
So visit MuggleCast.com for all that and much, 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 much more. Eric, please shower us with your haiku.
Okay. 575, guys. Each week, I always listen. Those kids know what they're talking about. MuggleCast is lots of fun.
What was the first line?
I always listen.
No, that's more than
words.
Five.
Oh, crap. That's right. I did it in words. I did five words, seven
words. Oh, no, it's syllables. It's syllables.
Oh, crap. It's syllables. I'm going to rewrite this quick. The show. Do the closing again.
That's embarrassing. I can't believe you thought it was worse.
Okay, no, each week I listen. Those kids know what they're... One, two, three, four,
doing.
Five, saying. Saying. Those kids know what they're saying. MuggleCast is fun. There we go. Okay, so revamped. Each week I listen, those kids know what they're saying. MuggleCast is fun.
Excellent.
Yes.
Yay. That's awesome.
All right, thank you everyone for listening. Another quick shout-out, we do this every once in a while. I just want to say thanks again to all the transcribers and everyone working on the show, because it really is a big team behind this whole podcast, especially the transcript area. Mike is working on hiring some new staff there, so if any anyone is interested in becoming a transcriber, email Micah at staff.mugglenet.com. I know he wanted me to announce that this week. Micah at staff.mugglenet.com saying you want to help out. He's looking for dedicated people. All you have to do is transcribe a few minutes of the show every week. That's it.
Accurately.
And
if
that's
it's not accurate,
too.
Then we'll drag your name through
yes,
the mud.
Yes, and if you email him and say, I can tell the difference between Laura and Jamie's voices especially, he will not hire you.
Yeah, you should know the difference between everyone's voice and be good at spelling all that. So thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Laura Thompson.
And I'm Jerry Cook.
Jerry, thanks for joining us, by the way, over at fandomforecast.com, right?
Yep.
It's the most unorganized outro I've ever done.
You guys had the Black Sisters on this week, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, we have.
From YouTube fame.
We were meant to have you on as well, weren't we? But time zones interfered.
Awesome.
Hey, next time.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us this week. We will see you next week for episode 117. Bye.
Bye.
Well, wouldn't that defeat the purpose of getting a mixer if you can't mix our individual audio tracks?
I don't. What are you saying?
Well, I'm saying if we're all in the same room or any proximity in which we could, you know, hug or dance or something, wouldn't our audio streams kind of cross over and make us quite difficult to edit?
Well, we would be.
Oh, the quality would be so good that it would far surpass.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we wouldn't be talking over each other once we're actually here.
Yeah, and if we would, we'd be...
Just be stupid.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that was what I was... Yeah, we just need to... We need to work out the kinks.
But you wouldn't hear feedback here.
Audio.
You wouldn't hear echoing here. I mean, it would be very easy to set up. There would not be any problems if everyone was just here.
No, it sounds good. Let me get back to you when I get home to the States in December.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I know you're crazy enough to drive out here at least once a month.
No, it's true.
You'll do it, right?
Yeah, yeah, I will.
And Laura would come, and maybe Micah, and we'll go out to eat afterwards and watch movies and
go to Chick-fil-A.
Cuddle and stuff. Oh, God, Chick-fil-A. Oh, so good.
I love
this. I just had that yesterday.
Oh. Mm. I have a good lesson for all of the kids out there who are in middle school, high school, even. I had to do a poetry project in like eighth grade for my language or English class. So I did like this whole, we had to write up all these different poems and stuff. And then I lucked out because 2 years later, we had to do another poetry packet, which included basically the same types of poems. So what did I do? I just used my one from eighth grade. Okay,
I did that
maybe
one
that's not
too
much of a lesson, but yeah, I mean, what I'm trying to say is it's okay to reuse some of your old schoolwork. It's not
it
like
it actually
you're,
is sometimes. I mean, you're plagiarizing yourself.
Yeah, and is it plagiarism if you're plagiarizing yourself?
And the whole thing is, I mean, when you're older, you're expected to have a better writing,
right,
you know, style, so you should probably just improve on what you said. But you
yeah,
can use some
that's
of
what I did, basically.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's like saying you could never write about a movie you've written about before.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
I did that all through high school. I recycled essays and all sorts of stuff.
And that's how you got through. You never, you know, by eighth grade, you were set. You had written everything you ever needed to.
Because pigs are sometimes made for slaughter, this is MuggleCast, episode 117 for October 16th. I don't even know what the f*** is going on. What episode are we on?